Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Vladimir Deeps, and this is the lead-in to Class War Battlefield podcast. I wanted to talk very quickly about the reasons Donald Trump became president. I have heard a lot of conversations, a lot of talk about exit polling. People don't say exit polling, but they talk about people, individuals who voted for Donald Trump being economically hurt. They talk about people being at a disadvantage in a neoliberal state. They talk about people wanting populism. And absent not having Bernie Sanders, many of them went to Donald Trump instead. Okay. I've said this many times before, and I'll say it again. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a couple of reasons. The first is, the majority of the people, okay, let's say, the number that I heard was correct, that a little bit over 20% of the people who voted for Donald Trump don't like him. Now, this is probably coming from not questionnaires that were answered at the polls, but from interviews that came after the election. So let's say over 20% of the people don't like him. All right, that's fine. Then why'd you vote for him? Well, I think he's going to run the country like a business. I think he's going to get things done. Yada, yada, yada. If you know how businesses have been operating over the last 30 years, and most of the people, if they're in economic trouble, that means they understand. They probably went through the process of downsizing. They probably went through the process of losing jobs because CEOs or owners wanted to take the jobs which they were working and move them overseas so they can make money. So if you know all this, why are you going to ask a person who has been in business all of his life, his words, not mine, has the same type of cultural affiliations as the people who you have watched take your jobs and move them overseas? Why are you then going to vote somebody in who has that same cultural mindset? Doesn't make sense. More, the people who are saying, well, I supported Bernie Sanders and now I'm supporting Donald Trump. That is a huge swing. That's a huge swing. That is like saying that, excuse me, you are supporting Hugo Chavez, and then he passes away, and you're going to go and you're going to support his most ardent right-wing critic. That's what that's saying. That makes no feasible sense. If you truthfully wanted an individual, and you were truthfully honest about it, then if you wanted a Bernie Sanders type person, go to the Green Party. Oh, well, the Green Party ain't never going to win, blase, blah. Yeah, the Green Party's never going to win because people like you keep selling it out. So here's the thing. All of these responses, all of these reasons given for why people voted for him, ultimately, outside of just logically deconstructing them, I look at one simple fact. The New York Times in May, I think it was, it might have been a little earlier than May, published an article, large article, detailing how the majority of people who were, or a lot of the people, not majority, but a lot of the people who were actually going to vote for Donald Trump were lying about it. Meaning, they were not telling pollsters when they would get surveys on the phone, they would get people approaching them on the streets, they would not tell them that they were going to vote for Donald Trump. Because they knew that it was frowned upon in society. So they weren't going to tell them that. Moreover, this is actually what has been going on in the South for a generation and a half, for two generations. You will have all of these people talking great things, having great interactions with black folks, and talking about, oh yes, we love everybody, we love everybody, things are great. You know, the civil rights movement definitely changed the South for the better. Black people are doing better. White people are doing better. Kumbaya, we're doing great. And then election time comes up. And what do? They go into the polls. They go into the polling places. And they elect right-wing individuals who increasingly, over the past 30 years, have sounded more and more anti-black and racist. You go back to the 70s, the majority of the people were using dog whistles. Now today, you don't have to use dog whistles. You can say exactly, oh, well, you know, the people in the inner cities have issues, and it's their fault, and they riot because of it. This is what, these are the people that they vote for. So this is not a new phenomenon. This is not a new phenomenon. Moreover, another article, which I was reading, a couple of articles actually, earlier in the year before Donald Trump started winning primaries. There was all of these, and actually this goes even back to last autumn. I might still actually have the article from, might have been the Washington Post. It was either the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post, where these newspapers, and these are reputable newspapers and news sites, talked about the coloring of the world and how in the next 50 years, the world was going to get darker because white people were dying. Now, they went into numbers. I really think it was the Washington Post where they went into statistics. It was nearly two full newspaper pages of information of this coming trend. And this was not the only trend. This was not the only paper doing this. If memory serves me correctly, the New York Times did the same thing. But it was towards a different angle. It wasn't, oh, well, the world's getting darker. I think they did one on birth rates, particularly in Europe and the U.S., and how in some countries like Italy, you're talking about a birth rate that is below 5%, that is, excuse me, negative 5% or lower. I mean, it's to the point where the population, they're not producing children as quick as they're dying. And this is a trend that they were seeing across Europe. And what these newspapers started speculating was that a lot of the anxiety that was leading to the economic disturbances and the political shockwaves that were starting to be felt was due to this. And just recently, actually, this week, I happened to pick up the Wall Street Journal, which I haven't done in a while. And what did I open to? A large article on death rates among white people in the United States. Whatever overt reason white people are given to why they voted for Donald Trump. Noam Chomsky said it. And he said this back in May before Donald Trump was, he was already on his way to becoming the Republican nominee, but before he was elected president. White people are dying. And it's not in Europe. It's all over the place. And they're being replaced. And there's anxiety from that. I always remember, and this may have just been something on the internet, but I always remember, because I heard it on the radio, the show that I used to listen to, when Barack Obama was on his way to even to picking up the nomination, for the Democratic Party. I think it was in March of 2008, maybe early April, but he hadn't clenched it yet. The show that I was listening to, the host was talking about the anxiety that Obama was causing among white folks. And this was, for black people, and this is always so interesting to me because white people don't get this. For black people, white people think we get mad about everything. And I always have to tell my white friends, you're projecting onto us. If black people truthfully, honestly wanted to get pissed off and wanted to focus like we did in the 60s, y'all would be in trouble. We don't care half the time. We just keep asking you to treat us fairly. And that's the problem, is you don't want to treat us fairly. But white people, they get mad and they stay mad about everything. Even things that they don't need to get mad about. And when Barack Obama was on his way to picking up the nominee, or the nomination, excuse me, he, a lot of white folks were just getting up in arms. And one specific instance went viral during a time period where I'm thinking the term was just really starting to become used a lot. This little girl, I don't remember how old she was, but she said to her father, or to her mother, that she was afraid of Barack Obama becoming president because he was going to enslave white people. She was afraid of him becoming president because he was going to enslave white people. And I'll tell you, after Barack Obama was elected, thinking back on it, a lot of the white folks I came into contact with, you know, I was proud. I was proud, and it wasn't I wasn't proud because, oh, well, I defeated white people, which is why a lot of white people are happy about Donald Trump now, is because they defeated black people. And that may seem a little bit harsh to some of you, but the reality is I look at how a lot of them are acting. That's how they're looking. But I was proud. And I was proud because I never thought I'd see that in my life. Never. But a lot of white folks would throw it at me and say, now you black people, I have nothing that you can complain about. This is a post-racialist society, so don't let me hear you complaining about nothing. And I can't tell you the number of white folks that said that. I was smart enough to knock it down. But there was almost a viciousness. And I think a lot of black people, we forget about that. But there was a viciousness when he did really take office. So, I think the reasons that white people give to why they voted for this man, too many people are giving, they're giving too much credit to that. They're giving way too much credit to that. Now, does that mean that some of it isn't true? No, some of it is true. But as I often tell my friends, and I don't tell much of them anymore, but the problem with the white population is they usually don't, one, see their true motivations until it's too late and they have to deal with the karma. Or two, they are capable of convincing themselves that their true motives are something completely different and then denying their original motives when the bill comes true, bill comes through for what they've done. So, like I said, I don't doubt that some of it's true. But I think there's deeper things that are going on. Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Vladimir Deese. Welcome to another episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. Man, I was waiting. Waiting for years. When was I going to see Class War talked about so openly on television and then or on the interwebs? I gotta tell you, and I hate to even say this, I hate to admit this, I hate to even want to think about it, but there might be some good coming out of Donald Trump anyway. The supposed white left has been asleep for a long time. They've been asleep. Now they're awake. Now they suddenly discovered over the last year and a half that there's economic inequality. Oh. I forgot about Occupy Wall Street, but wait a minute, Occupy Wall Street actually was a movement for the middle class, even though they tried to make it about the lower class, but it was about the middle class. Most of those people who organized Occupy Wall Street, they now have corporate jobs. A lot of them. I'm not saying you don't gotta live. But where you live, to me, when you are supposedly organizing a revolution, says a lot about who you are and what type of revolution you're trying to organize. But the white left has awoken. Awoken. That's the Southern coming out. Most of you don't know this, but I recorded my first Class War Battlefield podcast in a very crude form, no introduction, in September of 2011. I recorded it about a week before Occupy Wall Street started. That whole ordeal for me was somewhat maddening, because I heard all of these white folks talking about all of these problems, and yet they were only talking about them as they related to white people. And I pointed that out. I pointed that out several times in my earlier podcast, that it seemed to me that white people were concerned about poverty. They were concerned about economic inequality because it was now touching them on massive, massive, massive levels. They were worried about it because they were feeling it now. Whereas 10 years prior, that was a black thing. 20 years prior, that was a black thing. 30 years prior, that was a black thing. It was no longer a black thing. I remember this. I always recall this, recollect this when I hear clips now online with all of these white folks talking about economic disparity and injustice. I always remember this. Because the problems that exist in the economic system did not appear out of nowhere. Now, many people like to trace it back and just say, oh, well, it was when we took a neoliberal turn in the 1970s. But the neoliberal turn was in direct response to the civil rights gains of the 1960s. When people voted Richard Nixon in, they were voting against black progress. The stupidness of those people who most of them were first-time middle-classers. They had just been raised up via the biggest welfare government program ever executed on these shores. Building the middle class, building the white middle class, came from the government. They subsidized the whole thing. This isn't me just talking either. There's a lot of research out there that supports that. But when they seen black people getting uppity, the white backlash hit. That was 1966. Martin Luther King talked about this. The book, Why Do Americans Hate Welfare, documents this. As soon as black and brown people started being able to get in on the same sweet deals that white people had been able to get in on, they turned against those deals. And what that then did was it gave rise to the new right wing. And the new right wing, which the modern left has a hard time explaining, because the new right wing infected both the Republicans and the Democrats. They were mostly Republican, but from the middle 1960s through the middle 1980s, they cleaned Democratic house, meaning they clean the party out. All of the old lefties, the Kennedy left, mostly the Robert Kennedy types, were chucked out. And it was this new right wing which started going after the unions, which started going after those really good paying jobs, which started advocating free school choice to resegregate schools, but also to advocate school vouchers, which benefited primarily white kids. They went after the unions. They went after the living wage. They went after the economic gains that white people had enjoyed, all in the name of stopping black people from getting them. And white people, yes, liberal and conservative, championed those efforts. Now, everybody likes to always point out, I hear it on the left a lot, that Ronald Reagan started his campaign in a Mississippi town which was famous, and is famous still, for the murder of three civil rights workers. Well, what they failed to connect to then is the fact that the Reagan Revolution was only made possible by what? By Democrats, white Democrats, crossing over to vote for him. Meaning what? These people were nodding and winking at the symbolism that he was aiming to project. They were complicit in this. Not only were they complicit in it, they were so into it, they voted for him again. They voted for him again. This is the... That was a demonstration of race winning over economic reality. Why do I say this? I say it because George H.W. Bush called Reagan's projection of economic knowledge, or his economic scheme, he called it voodoo economics. Why? Because it didn't exist. It couldn't work the way that he was projecting it. And he knew it. And I would tell you point blank, considering the economic troubles that white folks were having at the time, they had to know that it couldn't work. So what, it was just a vote against the Democrats? I don't buy it. The man started, I mean, this was within living memory of people who were in their 40s at the time. I don't buy it. Moreover, the economic troubles hadn't stopped 4 years later. So if they were voting against Jimmy Carter for economic principles, and so they were voting for Ronald Reagan for economic principles, the economic situation of most Americans 4 years after he was elected, Ronald Reagan was elected, it was worse. So they should have then booted him out of office. If we are going to go with that logic, I don't buy it. They voted according to their race. And the ascension of that arm of the right wing led to the ascension of the new right wing among the Democrats, and that was the whole Hillary and Bill Clinton fiasco. Now, here's the thing. People forget. Bill Clinton was considered too left for the new right wing, which was taking hold in the Democratic Party. He was considered too left, and that's the reason why he was given Al Gore, because Al Gore was considered more conservative than him. People forget about this. And I haven't forgotten about it. I've been thinking about it a lot recently with everything that's been going on with the election. Trying to figure out, of course, what am I not seeing? Why did they scuttled Clinton's chances twice. Twice. But Al Gore was considered the conservative on the ticket. I want you to really think about that. But we forget We do. We forget. We forget the lessons that history has taught us. What we are seeing now, the economic result that we are seeing now, is really the result of racism, which took place in the 1960s. Everybody is talking about, let's forget about it, it doesn't matter, we are all in this boat together. You know something? We are all in this boat together. But if part of us sees that there is a gaping hole in the side of the boat and we can fix it, and the other side does not want to see that gaping hole because they're the ones who helped to put it there, so they keep ignoring it, well, then that boat is sinking, and I ain't staying on it. And in fact, I'll push you off of it if you can't see the... If you don't want to admit that there's a problem, let's, you know, take a swim. Whoop. Off the side. Whoop. We'll fix the boat, and we'll help you back up. But you can't stop us from fixing the boat. This is really, honestly... This is one of the most pivotal aspects of this economic turmoil. And you can tell that it's obviously a pivotal point. You can tell it's a pivotal point. How? Because anytime any black person wants to talk about racism, the other person, usually a white person, wants to then throw in women, LGBTQ, Muslims, immigrants, they want to throw in anything. But let's not talk about racism. Let's not talk about racism. We can talk about LGBTQ all day long, but let's not talk about racism. We can talk about women all day long, but let's not talk about racism. That's how you can tell that has been a main motivator. Because no, they don't want to talk about it. In fact, one of my favorite shows to listen to is The Context of White Supremacy. And I think it was either the week or the second week after the election, he was playing some clips. The host was playing clips of people talking about the election. And he played this great clip, which I should really find and put it in here because it is telling. And happened... I've seen the same thing on Democracy Now. This woman, she's a writer, she's an author. She was speaking to an NPR show, one of their hosts. And I mean, I don't listen to the show, but I know the name. I know the voice. I know the voice of the person, but I can't think of the name of the program. But she was speaking to him about the election, and... She made a point of, look, you know, there's a lot of racism going on here with the people, with how they were voting. And he said, oh, well, you know, we don't necessarily know that we blah, 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 blah. And she goes, no. Tired of playing the games. This was about mostly race. And you need to understand that. And blah, man, he cut her off. Oh, well, thank you. We're out of time. We got to go. Same thing happened with Democracy Now. The only difference was Amy Goodman didn't cut off the person. They were speaking to her via Skype, and suddenly, like right at the end of a sentence where this woman was saying, this is racism. This is straight up racism. Skype suddenly cut out. I mean, it was a clean break. It was a clean break. And then when she came back, she was singing a little bit of a different tune. So what I'm thinking happened was, on Democracy Now, they clipped her Skype connection, said, listen, we ain't taking that route. Now, if you want to come back, you can, you know, play the game. But if you don't, you ain't got to be on. She obviously said she wanted to play the game because she came back and said the bull crap that they wanted her to say. This is the reality of where we're at right now. This is the reality of where we're at right now. And I know a lot of you aren't going to like this. A lot of you are going to look at this and say, oh my God, you know, you're just fomenting racial hatred. I have to live in this skin. I ain't trying to make you comfortable. I've had to tell friends of mine that, and now I'm telling the listeners that. If you cannot stomach hearing about racism, especially when it comes to economic analyses, you need to find somewhere else to look and listen, because that is the primary reason why we are in the crap that we're in right now. White people want to put their heads in the sand and say race just doesn't exist. Now, when Barack Obama was first elected and he stepped into Congress to give his first State of the Union, nobody doubted that the person who said he lied, or excuse me, you lie, not he lied, but you lie. Nobody can doubt that that man had racial motives. But for some reason, and I mean this goes across the line, this goes across left, this goes across right. For some reason, everybody and their mama want to act like he's some magical Negro. That was a overt expression of the hostility which that man obviously felt while he was in office. Barack Obama was a figurehead. He had no power. I say it again. I was one of those people a couple of years ago. I was disappointed with him. And so I was very critical of him. But as I've really started paying attention to where the hell this country is and where the politics of this country is, I see that that man had no power. And in fact, nobody in their right mind said that George W. Bush had power. Nobody. But yet everybody wants to say that Barack Obama had just tons of power. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely 100% ridiculous. He had no power. And he wasn't put there to have power. He was put there to be a friendly face as they prepared the machine which Donald Trump is probably going to now wield. I'm tracking with great interest what is happening in Europe and what is happening over here, because right-wing groups are starting to come into vogue, and they're starting to take power. And the one thing that I can say unequivocally is that white folks do not respond well to economic problems. Not only do they not respond well to economic problems, they do not. They have proven themselves incapable of making correct analyses so that they can make corrections. So, for instance, as a black man, and I know a little bit about history, the Red Summer of 1921, most white people have no clue what the Red Summer is. The Red Summer, I forgot the number of cities, but you want to talk about racial violence? Black people have nothing on white people when it comes to racial violence. The Red Summer, dozens of cities, I want to say it was over 100, but I don't quote me on that, but dozens of cities burned. White people destroyed today what I would imagine would be hundreds of trillions of, or hundreds of billions, not trillions, but hundreds of billions of dollars of infrastructure, of homes, of black people. Prosperous black communities over that entire summer went up in smoke. Dozens of them. Dozens of them. Same thing happened in the late 1960s, early 1970s with, quote, urban renewal. That's a story that is not told. That, and actually it didn't start in the late 60s. It started in the 1950s. A lot of the interstate highways and connection bridges from the suburbs to the inner city areas where white people like to play at, the communities which they sliced through were well-functioning black communities. Well-functioning black communities. So, I'm watching because I know the history of this country. And indeed, all of these murders, all of these police murders that have been happening of black people, man, there's a part of me, because I'm a caring human being, that feels sorry for some of these guys. Because I'm a caring human being. I feel sorry because I know some of these people are under economic stress that's causing some of these interactions. But at the same goddamn time, watching the response of white police officers, watching the response of white people, I don't feel bad for them anymore. They need to get punished. Because I see there's a trend. There's a trend, and I'm hoping the trend that's taking place in Europe will not reach America, which is the immigrants, the most vulnerable, will be targeted. I have a feeling that, you know, history will repeat itself, or at least try to rhyme. But, man. Anyway, if you have questions, comments, concerns, you know, you can reach out to me. Send me a message. Alright, much love to you. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.